You're listening to An Introduction to the Catholic Life. Hello there.
Hello there.
Hello there.
Salve, and welcome back to An Introduction to the Catholic Life. We've got another interesting topic ahead of us today.
Kind of. Might not be.
Maybe not. Not when Sean speaks, no.
Rudy finds it interesting, so.
The topic finds really interesting.
Oh. Someone's got to. That's quite good.
I mean, sure, a lot of what we're talking about applies to Rudy today anyway, so.
Since, today,
yeah.
I'll ponder that in my heart as we go through the podcast.
Just discern it.
Yeah, to come to a conclusion.
I hope our listeners also ponder that remark.
That's fake news. I'm sorry. I'm part of the problem.
Yeah. So what's been happening since last time then? Anybody been up to?
I've been away. That's a nice lead on there. I've been in Cardiff for the weekend. It was nice. Actually, I had a couple of really nice masses down there. On the Saturday, I went to the chaplaincy of Cardiff University, which is ran by the Oratorians.
Oratorians, yeah. I see them. I think it's Instagram they're on or something like that.
I didn't know that. No.
Quite good photos of that.
So they've got an actual chapel which is attached to a Nazareth house, which is. Obviously, it's old folks coming to the end of their life, ran by nuns. So there was nuns there, loads of old folk in wheelchairs, and then students all at this mass. And it was a really kind of nice mix to see, people at different stages in their life all at mass, and it's just quite nice to reflect on that while you're
That's cool.
at mass. But there's only two of them, so I don't think it's an actual oratory in terms of the Oratorians.
Right.
They do have a little oratory chapel, which was stunning. Just in the back gardens, four pews, with a wee tiny altar in it as well. So that was nice. And then I went to the cathedral on Sunday, and there was a big, massive choir, and it was good.
Well,
it was really good music. Did Ave Verum and all that.
Nice.
There you go. So you go to Cardiff for the weekend, not expecting particularly great liturgy, and you get it. There you go.
I wasn't expecting anything.
I mean, most time if you go to a cathedral in the UK, generally speaking, it's not
Yeah.
A few hymns.
No, the hymns were good. I think the Welsh are meant to be known for their singing and choirs and all that kind of thing. They've got a better reputation, so. It was good. It was a lovely weekend. First time being in Cardiff. Lovely wee city. I would go again.
There we are.
Anyone else do anything interesting for the weekend?
No.
Silence.
Just family life. Yeah,
pretty bog standard week, to be honest. Yeah. I'll go to Cardiff next week, so I've got some food.
Also went to a board game cafe.
Oh yeah, you tell me about this.
Yeah, just on the Saturday night. It was before us, so really nice. It was well kept. There was lots of different board games.
That's good.
So went up and got ID'd. Four of us got ID'd by two bouncers to go to a board game cafe, and then we sat and had cups of tea and played board games. It was good. That sounds like a really boring Saturday night, but it was quite.
I was editing the podcast last Saturday night, quite enjoyed editing it. It was a good laugh, although I had never edited the music in before.
You did a good job though.
Thank you.
Better than me.
Well, I thought you were the best at it because I got to listen to the music for 2 minutes. But that's just my opinion.
Yes, that is just your opinion.
But really, the topic of this podcast actually was born out of our moaning. Moaning about stuff. Really?
Mm-hmm.
Kind of.
Bad intentions.
Mm-hmm. Really, it was you.
Me?
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess when we all get together, we quite often sit and talk about the state of the world.
So it's an easy rabbit hole to get down.
It's easy, yeah.
To be
it's
fair.
Very easy to do that.
Right, yeah. So there have been a few trends, perhaps, in certainly culture in the Anglosphere, but probably in other places too, which have become very common, they've become very mainstream, and they claim to be movements of morality. And that's exactly what we're going to be talking about today, morality, what that is, what it's not. It's quite a lot to unpack. But there were a couple of things in particular which came to mind. I think I mentioned this maybe in another recording, but I'm always struck by the words and semantics and literature used by many of those in the veganism lobby, which of course has presented itself over the last year or two as being a modern moral movement, which has arisen in response to what is deemed to be a crisis of the climate, of the environment, and so forth. And so often you hear slogans such as choose veganism, choose life, or choose life, not death, and so on and so forth. It's language which has been transplanted from an authentic pro-life movement into something quite different with very different aims and intentions, whether those aims and intentions be moral or immoral or otherwise. And this really sort of got me thinking, got all of us thinking about what exactly makes an action moral, what motivates morality, what is its end, is it the action itself, is it its immediate consequences, or is there something more profound to that? And so that's what we're going to try to unpack over the course of the next little spell in the podcast.
I thought we were talking about Brexit, so...
We couldn't, though. I mean, even if we tried, it would be out of date by the time we released the podcast.
True.
Oh, there's been too much. I get these, the Apple notifications for, like, news stories. I don't know if you get them as well, and, like, the number that have popped up about Brexit in the past 2 days have actually just made me despair about politics. So, I'm thankful we're not talking about that. But the veganism thing is interesting, and I'm sure we have spoken about it before. And I mean, a lot of this topic that we're going to be talking about tonight will maybe be echoing sentiments that we expressed during the podcast on virtue signalling, or even some of it, and then obviously we'll be presenting the kind of Catholic understanding of morality towards the end. But in that podcast, actually, we read this scripture as well, which I'm about to read, and it's basically, this is the gospel for Ash Wednesday. And really, it's a kind of a practical guide to morality. So I'll read that out. So this is from the 6th chapter of Matthew's Gospel. Jesus said to his disciples, "Be careful not to parade your good deeds before men to attract their notice. By doing this, you will lose all reward from your Father in heaven. So when you give alms, do not have it trumpeted before you. That is what the hypocrites do in the synagogues and in the streets, to win men's admiration. I tell you solemnly, they have had their reward. But when you give alms, your left hand must not know what your right is doing. Your almsgiving must be secret, and your Father who sees all that is done in secret will reward you. And when you pray, do not imitate the hypocrites. They love to say their prayers standing up in the synagogues and at the street corners for people to see them. I tell you solemnly, they have had their reward. But when you pray, go to your private room, and when you have shut your door, pray to your Father who is in secret. And your Father, who sees all that is done in secret, will reward you." So, and it goes on to say much the same thing about fasting, you know, don't look gloomy like the hypocrites do, like we were all doing on Ash Wednesday. but really, you know, that is on a practical level, maybe not on a kind of theological level, which is what we're going to maybe discuss a little bit more over the rest of this podcast, but on a practical level, that's how we go about being moral, because being moral is not done, as that scripture suggests, it's not done to attract the admiration of other men, other women here. It's done simply to please God, because that's what we are called to do here on earth.
Yeah, I think that there's both of those kind of comments, your one first on veganism and that, highlight different parts of what morality is. So the veganism one kind of was brought back up into our minds when there was a young girl who presented a petition to Pope Francis to become vegan for Lent, and they'd give him £1 million to give to a charity. But behind that, so that there's an action there, but behind it, you know, the intention is questionable. And so there's these different parts of moral acts, you know, intention, object, end, that all of these things have touched on. But so with that one, that, you know, we can question the intention of it. Is it a PR stunt to get the Pope to back a movement which sees veganism as the moral standard of the day? And the points that you were making, they seem to have good intentions of, they see a crisis in the climate and climate change, and their action towards that is veganism. Substituting other moral acts for this moral act, you know, and using language that we'd use for other moral goods to promote their agenda.
It's like an elevation of animals to the same level of us as well. This is the thing. So, you know, part of veganism, part of the ideology behind veganism is the idea that to kill an animal is not justified. You know, you shouldn't do that to eat, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's not necessarily, and it's not kind. And so you think about, around the West End, there was posters promoting veganism on bus shelters and things like that. I saw it on a few buses as well. And it was a picture of a sheep. And it was like, you know, something along the lines of, you know, well, do I deserve to die, you know. And it's this kind of raising the act of killing an animal to eat it as a kind of, to being kind of similar to killing a human, or to be, to this, you know, basically saying that this is not morally justifiable anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, we shouldn't be able to do this. And this is something that has always been accepted as morally okay, but they're trying to challenge that and say, this is not morally okay, and mm-hmm. we need to, and they do that by basically personalising the animals and saying that they're somehow, if not the level of our dignity, somehow close to it, you know, something that we can't take away from them, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Even the most sincere attempt at constructing a morality which is divorced from God ends up reversing the natural, or certainly, but the moral order as well. So we of course read in the first 5 books of the Old Testament that man is entrusted with the stewardship of the earth, and with that all the creatures who roam the earth, the creatures of the sea and so forth, and with that there are certain points which we can extract. We have the understanding, of course, that man may, of course, use animals as he sees fit. This is not an excuse to abuse that which has been put in his care, not at all. But he has a degree of stewardship over the earth. That's perhaps the first thing. Any moral system which breaks away from that fundamental truth of man's stewardship of the earth will inevitably end up running into all sorts of strange situations, and will hit all sorts of walls. Just to draw another example, perhaps, I was reading last week the comments of a congresswoman in the States who's made quite an impression in US politics and US media. This is Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, a 29-year-old congresswoman in the US House of Representatives. She was just elected in the midterms in November. And she made a remark during an interview, and she said words to the effect of, many millennials are now wondering whether it is moral at all to have children in this time when we are facing a crisis of climate change, a crisis of the environment. That, for me, crystallised the issue. We have someone diagnosing a problem, but putting it out of its correct and proper place. That's exactly the sort of difficulties we run into when we try to establish moral systems which are divorced from that which is the foundation of that which is moral.
So that's when, that's the kind of mentality, I suppose, we arise at when we do have that kind of wrong idea of priorities, really, in the moral life. But James, you were saying earlier on, you know, about the actual kind of fundamentals of what makes a decision moral or not, you know, and I suppose if we live out moral lives, we'll have a kind of healthy worldview, which obviously these kind of, you know, that sort of statement of, you know, is it okay to have kids nowadays, you know, clearly is born out of a kind of erroneous worldview. which has, as you said, you know, the wrong ideas at its very kind of foundations. But what are the correct foundations, I suppose? That's maybe the question that we would be interesting to discuss.
Mm-hmm. I guess in a society in which we've kind of tried to disregard the idea or kind of condemn the idea of objective truth and the fact that, you know, there is such a thing as a right moral action and a wrong moral action, by doing that we've left it, you know, it's completely subjective now, we can do what we want and my truth is different from your truth. And then what you get in that environment is that you get people kind of coming together and saying, well, I think that you know, the biggest problem here is that we need to look after the planet, or I think it's because we need to look after animals. And you get them kind of pushing their ideology through, you know, political parties and through pressure groups and these sorts of things, and become really big issues. And so you find people who are pushing veganism and these sorts of things with the kind of undertones of the ideology behind it is really just saying that this is the most important thing we need to worry about right now. And you see the same thing with environmentalism as well, that it kind of, mm-hmm. it's that wrong order of, you know, it's like put as the highest good or the highest concern for humanity, when really we should be focusing on, you know, yeah, proper morality.
Yeah, it's quite interesting. I remember I was at a talk once and they were speaking about, you know, the human faculty of the will, and our human will always drives us towards something that we perceive to be good. You know, so no one does something, no rational, sane person does something that they willfully understand to be wrong. They will see some, and they may be very wrong in that, but they will see some good. And, you know, the fact that people are so invested into the environmental movement or veganism actually demonstrates the force of our will. You know, we are always ordered to do what we believe to be good. But as you say, in a world where we don't have, or we reject the idea of
objective truth,
that will can be so easily skewed to things that are not that important. And especially in a world that's turned its back on God.
Yeah, because there's no hierarchy anymore.
Exactly.
It's like there's no hierarchy of truth, there's no hierarchy of morality.
So morality is arbitrary.
Yeah, and so you just make up, like, what's the biggest concern for you, or what's the biggest concern that you can see? And then you kind of get together and champion that, and it's mm-hmm. who's got the loudest voice. And I think that probably ties into why that young woman, is a young woman, wasn't it, who wrote to the wrote to Pope Francis, mm-hmm. tried to do that.
She's a 12-year-old girl. She's a Catholic as well, right. Actually.
But it's the same kind of thing. It's like, actually, I mean, you don't want to read too much into her motives. Of course, we don't know them, but people who do those kind of things are trying to champion a particular cause to get, you know, publicity, to get to push that and to kind of bring it into the kind of public sphere more.
It might be fair to say that many people now, although they wouldn't identify as such, they conform to a consequentialist view of their own lives and of the world. What does that mean? It basically means that the criteria for any moral action or immoral action is its immediate consequences. And if people perceive, rightly or wrongly, that an action leads to a certain result in the immediate aftermath of that action, they will then come to a decision as to whether they are living good lives or otherwise. And if they perceive that, quote, they are not hurting anyone, you hear that so often with so many different moral concerns of the day. If they perceive that they're not hurting anyone, then by their own moral criteria, they're living a moral life, and this is a big, big problem. Mm-hmm. That, I think, is something which applies very much to philosophies which underpin the likes of veganism or population control movements and so on. As long as you perceive that you're not hurting anyone according to your own criteria, then you're okay, and presumably everyone else is too.
And there's a kind of superiority to it as well, isn't there, that somehow you're morally superior if you are, you know, X, Y, and Z, if you're a vegan, if you recycle, if you won't allow anyone to be offended in your company, these sorts of statements that people would make. I think if you were to ask someone today what makes a morally upright person, those are kind of three things that would pop up. I mean, there'd be lots of other things, but those three would certainly be there, that, you know, I will not let anyone be offended in my company. I would stop, you know, if you're saying something that's offensive, I'm going to stop you and say that's offensive. You know, you need to recycle, you need to, you know, do these sorts of things for the environment. And yeah, they're all true, like, that's true, like, you can do them and that's can be morally good, but it's not the top of the hierarchy of what makes someone a morally good person.
So I think that there is, in our understanding, there is that hierarchy of goods, of moral goods and moral issues. And what that is based on is the Catholic is a Catholic understanding of morality, which is based on God, which is based on the church's teachings and traditions. And people nowadays, because they have swept away the Christian foundations of society, they no longer believe in that. Then what they choose to be the moral actions is what, you know, is what they deem to be the most important thing. And because of that, everything else is chucked out the window. So, you know, these people can be doing things that are good. You know, those actions can be good moral actions and good moral things, but they're at the expense of, you know, of other things which are, you know, truly good. So, for instance, you know, climate change, crisis. Okay, there's too many humans, overpopulation. Right, so you know, it's coming from something that they think is a good thing, but what, you know, but because of that, the rest of their morality totally changes. So abortion is fine, imagine euthanasia is fine, gets rid of less people, more people. Sorry, so that hierarchy is totally flipped on its head,
and they will be consistent with their ethic, but their ethic has the wrong start point. No, mm-hmm. You're totally right, because I mean, if God is at the top of your kind of pyramid of your ethics, you know, everything that flows from, you know, a correct relationship with God is going to be good. Mm-hmm. If at the top of your pyramid, as you say, environmentalism, tackling climate change, then there will be things that will be, as you say, at the expense of a correctly ordered morality, mm-hmm. that will then be deemed okay. There's a quote I heard from Archbishop Fulton Sheen, and he said, you know, if we do not live what we believe, we will believe what we live, you know. And that is very true, because people, interestingly, and you picked up on this as well, Connor, when you said there's a kind of superiority about these sorts of, you know, types of morality, because a lot of people have this idea that, yeah, that thing that they are championing is the most important moral action that you can do, and if anyone's not doing that, then, you know, they are beneath you. So, you know, I mean, that is the kind of definition of self-righteousness.
I think something which maybe highlights that, might be a bit controversial, would be views on Donald Trump in America. So people would say, you know, I was having a conversation at the weekend, and you know, a guy was saying, he was talking to a girl in his flat, and the students, and she was talking about how terrible Donald Trump was, and he was like, yeah, but I think maybe Clinton might have been worse. And he said she started screaming at him about how terrible Donald Trump was, and he was imprisoning babies, and then she stormed out the flat. But I think, and there's many reactions like that in America. You know, you see videos. I've seen a video of a guy with a MAGA hat, and a guy wouldn't serve him in a shop, and all this thing. But because of their moral view, you know, seeing supporting Donald Trump as an immoral act, the reaction is a violent act towards another human being,
mm-hmm.
and they justify that because of how they view morality. It's totally skewed, you know. It's, I don't know.
Yeah, well, sums it up.
And if you think about, you know, traditionally the Ten Commandments been seen as the kind of, you know, one of the basis of one of the foundations of the moral law. And you think today's society, most of those can be broken, and you're still seen as quite a morally upstanding person. Like, mm-hmm. you don't have to keep the Sabbath holy. You don't have to not create idols. You don't have to, you know, you know, not take the Lord's name in vain. You don't have to not commit adultery. Like, that's fine, you can commit adultery if you want. It's not necessarily a bad thing or a good thing.
It's promoted as a good thing as well.
Well, I mean, the amount of times you see, how many articles and things on TV programs as well, like, you know, talking about the kind of the benefits of, what was it around at Christmas? Remember the article we saw? Yeah. It was at the Times or something.
It was like, for Christmas this year, I'm giving my husband like the weekend off or something like that.
Yeah, to basically go and cheat. And it's like, that's where we've got to as a society. And so, like, if we see that even, you know, the vast majority of the Ten Commandments are seen as, you know, not only just like unimportant, but they're actually almost, you know, the kind of opposites of the Ten Commandments are kind of promoted almost. Mm. It's like, no wonder the morality of society is kind of falling apart, and the moral kind of conscience and these sorts of things.
I always think when it comes to all the kind of issues that are presented as moral issues, they're all such easy wins. See, for particularly, you know, if you look on the kind of Twitter feed of any politician, you know, they will say something, you know, that's just so easy for everyone to agree with. You know, they'll post something like, "We must do more to help our environment," and they'll get like tens of thousands of retweets on something that's just so nothing. You know, I really do find it frustrating because you've got all these people who actually probably, you know, in terms of politicians, they subscribe to quite subtly insidious ideologies, but they get such easy wins with these kind of tweets that are not moral. Do you know what I mean? And even if they're tweeting about something good, it's not moral to notice there is a problem. It's moral to do something about it. It really bugs me that, you know, people can get away with looking like a good person.
I think you're touching on something which is really interesting. It might be fair to say that morality has, perhaps over the last decade or so, with the emergence of the internet and social media, been taken over by the power of image. Turning away from the environment to another catastrophe which gripped the media's attention, this was the refugee crisis, when that first emerged, I think 3 years ago now. And first of all, there was, an outpouring of empathy for those who were legitimately suffering in Syria and the Middle East. Then, of course, Chancellor Angela Merkel opened up the borders of the German nation state and so forth, and the rest is history. You had a huge, huge, unprecedented influx of people arriving from the Middle East, but then also people from North Africa and people from Eritrea, people from Afghanistan, people from all sorts of parts of the world which weren't actually connected with the original flashpoint in Syria itself. And that really only received public approval after the spreading of an image of the boy from Syria, Aylan Kurdi, who was washed up tragically on a Turkish beach. And after that image went viral on Twitter, Instagram, Reuters, all the various news channels, that's really when public opinion started to sway. And it became an issue which, as you touched on there, Sean, it became something which everyone not only did agree with, but had to agree with, I think, with the consequences of political action which followed. And so the borders of the European Union were opened and so forth. But I was reading an interesting book just a couple of weeks ago by an atheist journalist, Douglas Murray, and he touched on something which has already come up in this conversation. We do have a shortage of family values and so forth in Europe, and so we see the solution to that as being coming with massive immigration from elsewhere. You see that so often, but it's a sign of a culture and of millions upon millions of individuals who have lost that sense of moral responsibility to maintain their own culture as well. They feel they have to bring in others from elsewhere to give them a sense of moral action, of moral direction. I think that's very interesting, but it's troubling in equal measure too.
One of the things that I kind of wanted to mention coming into this podcast was, you know, and obviously we've spoken about, you know, kind of wrong ideas and wrong kind of baselines for morality, but when I read Jesus of Nazareth by Pope Benedict, I remember in a kind of particular section of the book when he was speaking about morality, you know, it became kind of so kind of clear for me as to, you know, what exactly the Catholic vision of morality is. And Benedict XVI spoke about in that book how, you know, Catholic morality was, you know, in a certain sense defined at the Sermon on the Mount. You know, the Beatitudes that are the kind of seven pillars of kind of Christian morality, really, were first, you know, articulated by Christ at the Sermon on the Mount. But when those Beatitudes were first articulated, they were seen by the apostles to be, you know, what they had to strive for. And Benedict XVI was speaking about, you know, why exactly they had to strive for those Beatitudes. And he said, you know, these Beatitudes actually described the figure of Christ himself. You know, these Beatitudes were exactly what Christ lived out in his life. And if we live out these Beatitudes, we assimilate that life that Christ lived. And if we assimilate the life that Christ lived, we are acting in a perfect way. Now, obviously, we won't get that all the time, but you know, we need to strive for perfection. You know, be perfect as your Heavenly Father is perfect. And that's how we do that, and that's the baseline for authentic morality.
Exactly. So the Catholic response to this is that, you know, if you want to live a moral life, imitate Christ. You know, that's the fundamental point. And you can, of course, these issues that are kind of coming up in society, they're all, you know, good causes, most of them, I think, but in and of themselves they can be, but ultimately they're kind of secondary to the to your ultimate goal, which is to imitate Christ and to try and live the Catholic life as best as you can, to become, you know, a person who lives in true morality, because otherwise there's, you know, championing veganism or any of these other kind of things is, that might be your thing and that's good, but at the same time, if you get to the gates of, you know, if you get to Judgment Day and you say, well, I spent my whole life championing this, you know, the life of sheep, it's like, well, you know, where's that in the gospel? Where's that in the church tradition? Yeah. Where's that in, you know, what's that going to do to your spiritual life, really, and your holiness? Mm-hmm. And we have to have a kind of different view than the... We have to reject the kind of mainstream view of morality and stick to our own, I think.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think the simple point of that was there's a universal call to holiness, mm-hmm, that we all have to respond to. So if you sort out your own personal holiness, you know, all these other good things that you're doing will be properly good.
And more fulfilling as, yeah, well. Because, I mean, these things, you know, whether it's environmentalism or what have you, you know, or the immigration crisis or whatever, you know, these are things that we need to, I suppose, act on. You know, we need to do these things, but they won't be our ultimate fulfillment. Our ultimate fulfillment will be in a relationship with God who loves us.
Mm-hmm.
And if we love him and live that out through Catholic morality, that will be our ultimate fulfillment.
I think really we're called to reject what's perhaps become a sort of an institutionalised morality. Each of these crises in turn, be it the immigration crisis or environmentalism or climate change, each demands an institutional response, fine. But this cannot absolve us of individual responsibility for our own moral lives and moral action. Coming back just very briefly to what you were saying 5 or 2 minutes ago, Sean, we have individual responsibilities, we have individual commitments, and those individual commitments should demand sacrifices, they should demand changes to our lives. It can't just be something which we can agree with and we all sort of get on. We are principally saved as individuals, not as groups or as institutions. It's an individual call to holiness, really, and that's something which is a challenge, but it's one which we should all be glad to take up.
Was it not Mother Teresa said something along the lines of, you know, someone asked her, like, what's wrong with the church or where the sinfulness of the church comes from, and she said, me. And something along those lines. And I guess you could say the same thing about the world. Where does, you know, where all these problems come from? Well, it starts with us individually, like you're saying. And so, you know, sort your own house out in order, you know, get your own soul on track, get your own, you know, relationship with Christ and the church back on track and through the sacraments and through prayer. And then that's how you begin to kind of, you know, to really change the world and to change the church for the better. It starts, mm-hmm, at the individual level, like you're saying, you know, rather than kind of jumping on the bandwagons and things like that.
Like, if you're properly holy, like, think what amazing stuff you'll be able to do. Do you know what I mean? Just be holy first.
And that would take us a lifetime to do, so we'll be busy. If we all just agree now to try and get holier, then we'll be at it. We just see each other in 50 years' time, we'll still be in that position. But that's the Catholic life, so.
Yeah. Amen.
So then, here's to meeting up in 50 years. Hopefully a bit better. No?
I'll be dead by then.
James dead at 76.
You never know.
That's it.
Mm-hmm. Ever ready?
Mm?
Ever ready?
Yeah, hopefully I'm holy by then, anyway.
Holier, at least.
Yes. So, thank you. You've made me feel better about myself.
Yeah. You need to set realistic goals, you know. So it's
I was laughing at what you said at the last podcast when I was editing, when you said scale up your Lent and that's how you're doing in life. So if you have a bad Lent, you're going to hell.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Well, I didn't actually say that.
You didn't say that. That's what I heard.
No.
I mean, that's just me. I like that sort of chat, but that's just me.
Yeah.
But anyway, we don't have any shout-outs
this week.
We do.
For Luke.
Oh, yeah.
Who messaged us, was a listener. He said it was good to have us back, and he suggested a topic, so...
Very good topic as well. So
yeah,
it's in the works.
We're looking forward to doing it, so we'll do that, Luke, at some point.
Cheers for the message, and if anyone else has any messages, please do drop them in. We're happy to take suggestions for topics. So you can message us on the usual social media platforms.
LinkedIn. Facebook, Instagram.
Yeah.
Are we still on Twitter?
Yes.
Yep. I'm not on Twitter, so.
Okay. Good for you.
I'm out the loop with that kind of thing, I don't know for.
Rosary during this podcast.
Oh dear.
It's now a T.
It's a tau.
Oh no.
Oh.
Pick up cross.
Yeah. Pick up any tiny bit of metal in the Sorry, Jesus.
On that note. Here's to the pint, the mic and the cross.
Cheers.
Amen.